The best Giants talk in the Bay is on 95.7 The Game. Reaction to every pitch.
Miller throws. He got him with the fastball. Miller's pointing at all the Reds.
Every home run.
High drive! Left field! Out of here!
And every big play.
A little slow roller. Chapman.
It's your fix for Giants baseball.
It is a dream come true, but it's a very recent dream.
The Orange and Black Weekend Wrap.
The pitch to Eldridge. Bouncing ball to second. And that's the ball game. So it comes down to Mejia throwing one pitch. And the Giants drop a tough one, having the lead in the ninth.
Hello there. Welcome in to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. Sam Lohman here alongside my co-host Dan DeVone on this fabulous Saturday, July 11th. And stop me if you heard this before, but Giants lost last night because of the bullpen. Oh, no one stopped me. It's happened a lot before. Giants lose 4-3 to the Rockies in a game in which they led 2-1 going into the top in the ninth inning. Caleb Killian comes in and can't shut the door, and that is putting the ninth inning very, very mildly, Dan. That was an hour-long ninth inning last night. One of the most bonkers ninth innings that I have ever seen at a Giants game. The top of the ninth inning was crazy enough. Then you get to the bottom of the ninth inning, where all hell broke loose almost. You got two runners on. Casey Schmidt hits a blooper out the center. The center fielder comes in. I think it was Freeman. Dives, doesn't make the catch. No umpire makes the call. At least no umpire visibly makes a call. And you had a ballpark of 30,000-something people all standing there going, what the heck is going on here? Anyway, how you doing this morning, Dan?
I'm well. It's another Saturday. A day in the life of our program here and of Giants fans. That was really strange. That ninth inning was just kind of entertaining, though, if nothing else. I guess my takeaway is that two highly competitive teams that are about at the same level. If you think about it, I mean, you know, two of the worst teams.
Are they competitive? They're just both really bad.
Well, that's what I mean. They're competitive with each other because they're at about the same, just about eye level in terms of talent, which is really not saying a lot for the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, it's a sad battle to stay out of the league's basement. That's basically what this weekend between the Giants and the Rockies are. Again, welcome into the show.
Combined 112 losses.
God, not even the All-Star break yet. I mean, look, it's the National League's toilet bowl. I think only the Mets are in that same level of bad as the Giants and Rockies are. Again, we are coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk, righteously brewed in San Francisco, and it overshadowed what was kind of not the most exciting game. It was a pretty blah Friday night game. Again, it was 2-1 going into that ninth inning. Robbie Ray, solid in his five-plus innings of work until the walks started to rear their ugly head, especially in that sixth inning. And I do want to give a shout-out to one positive that happened last night. Dylan Smith, good, coming in with the bases loaded, no outs, in that sixth inning, getting those three outs, not allowing a run. And we'll hear from Dylan later in the show, Dan. But I remember I had a conversation with Jordan Hicks a couple years ago when he was on the Giants. And I believe it was when I had him on for Garlic Fries and Baseball Guys. And he was saying, like, you know, for relievers, it's tough because the media always wants to talk to a reliever when something goes wrong, when they blow the game, when they give up the go-ahead run. Mm. But no one ever wants to talk to the reliever after they do something good or, you know, basically do their job. And so I made it a point after Dylan got out of that inning to chat with him last night and give him his flowers. So we'll be hearing from Dylan Smith later in the show as well. You know who else we're going to hear from on this show, Dan?
Tell me.
I'm excited to do this one. I had a chance to sit down with Ron Washington yesterday before the game. Had a great conversation with him. We will replay that probably at 11 o'clock this morning, so definitely don't go anywhere. You're going to want to hear that. That was an awesome conversation. Talked about his time coaching in Oakland, why he came back to San Francisco, some of his biggest successes as a coach of who he's worked with. So just Ron Washington, a baseball lifer, truly is. He is just one of the most fun baseball guys to talk to. So that was really awesome getting able to chat with him. And so we will hear that at 11 this morning. As for last night's game, though, Dan, I always have a say in sports. When you lose by one score, whether by one goal, one bucket, one touchdown, one run, You didn't just lose for any one reason. There was a lot that didn't go right last night. There was an offense that, going against Tanner Gordon, a guy with a 6.95 ERA, absolutely shutting this team down. And so you're not scoring against a bad pitcher. That sets you up for that puts you in a situation with a bullpen that's not very good, having no margin of error to work with. One thing just leads to another, to another, to another, not taking advantage of opportunities, doing a bad job of setting up opportunities, and then you end up having the ninth inning happen, and everybody's angry.
Yeah, I want to say Tanner Gordon is a lot like many pitchers that have come through Colorado, that his splits are sort of highly indicative of sort of the pitcher he is. I think he's much, much better on the road. So it can be a little deceptive when you look at the bloated ERA, but point well taken that he should not have been as effective as he was. I'd say Robbie Ray, his outings are really key from this point forward, because you want high production out of him just simply because you want to get as much back from him when you put him on the market coming up in a couple of weeks. And he labored. It wasn't one of his stronger performances. And yes, he dealt with control issues once again, but thanks to Dylan Smith, he was able to gut through. But it's, I don't know, how many times have we seen this? It's just not a good bullpen, Sammy. I mean, we can break this down and get into the ninth inning, as I'm sure we will, but really, when it comes down to it and you have a one-digit lead, you're going into the ninth, it's, you know that there is absolutely no security at this point that this thing is far, far from over. And sure enough, once again, whether it was Killian or, I don't know, you just fill in the name. There's absolutely no sense of confidence that they're going to get this thing done.
Well, that's always my favorite game to play on Twitter after all these kind of Giants losses. And I'm gonna call out our guy, Alex, in Atlanta. He's called into the show a couple times. He's a big-time caller on the Morning Roast. He'll always tweet out after every bullpen meltdown, you know, way to go, Tony Vitello, or something of that nature. And my fair response to him is like, what would you rather had? Who you go to? Like, this is why, like, I'm not trying to absolve Tony Vitello of all things.
You can on this one.
The bullpen, Dan, I don't really blame him for a lot. I actually thought Tony did a very good job managing the bullpen last night. Not just with Dylan Smith coming in and getting those three outs. That's more on Dylan, I think, but good on Tony Vitello to put him into that situation. And then later in the game, he goes to Sam Hentges in the seventh inning to get, who's our guy? I think Roger Caring is his name. I don't think his first name's Roger. Doesn't matter. Caring to get him. He's a switch hitter to go from the left side to the right side, where he's a slightly weaker hitter. And Sam Hentges does a lot. And Sam Hentges does really, really good against right-handed hitters. He flipped him around there. We've seen that blow up in the Giants' face in the past. It ends up working out. He strikes him out. And Hentges comes back in the eighth inning to face two righties and a switch hitter who would be hitting righty. Gets all three of those outs there. I thought that was great bullpen management and how he utilized Hentges in that situation. Unfortunately, though, it's you got a whole other inning that you got to get through there. And Caleb Killian, just, I feel for the guy. I just he's like everyone else on this team. He's just not a closer.
Yeah, I mean, who are the greatest managers of all time in baseball? Joe McCarthy, Casey Stengel.
Yeah, Bruce Bochy, Tony La Russa. Yeah,
what are they going to do if they have that bullpen? Like, this is one of those that, you know, I've gone after Vitello, you know this, but when it comes to the bullpen, his hands are tied. What? It's just throw a dart at this point. And what's amazing about the back end of that bullpen is that, as bad as it was last year, at least there were stretches where you could count on Camilo Duvall before he exploded. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Ryan Walker. I can't think of a series this year. Forget about a week or a month. I can't even think over a sustained two series where Vitello could say, okay, I feel comfortable in a one-run game or in a close game going to my bullpen and shutting the door, because they've been able to do it over, fill in the blank, the last week or 4 days. He hasn't even had that in his back pocket. I've never seen more ineptitude, at least for the Giants. I maybe you got to go back to the 80s when you're talking about a setup and a closer.
Yeah, no, this is – I mean, Steven Rizzotto had this before the season started. He thought this could be the worst bullpen in franchise history. And I was like, oh, come on.
And now look.
And now, there you go. There's Steven Rizzotto, Pasta, chiming in right there. By the way, quick, not Roger Carey, Cole Carey was his name. So we'll make sure we get his name right there. But, yeah, to your point with the bullpen, Dan, it's, yeah, there's no option. There's no option you can go to in any inning where you feel good. There was a period in April where I thought, you know, maybe this bullpen might be better than we expected, at least like a mid-tier bullpen. But yeah, I just, this is why I have a hard time getting angry at Tony Vitello on any given night about the bullpen. How are you supposed to pass a test when there are no right answers? That's the situation that Tony finds himself in night out with this bullpen here. And then when you're working with a slim margin of error against a very bad team, Tony, Dan, Giants had 11 hits last night. 8 of those hits, I believe, came with nobody on base. And that kind of falls in line with the pattern you've seen all year with this team. The Giants lead the league in hits with the bases empty. They lead the league in doubles with the bases empty. So when you see this team getting lots of hits, when you see this team with a high batting average, it doesn't paint the whole story. They're getting hits, but these hits aren't doing damage. And they're not doing damage after getting these hits. And as a result, you're not able to score runs. You're not able to give your bullpen a cushion. And a very weak unit is put into a very difficult situation night in and night out. One thing always begets another with this team. That's why I say it's never just one thing. Something happens, a domino falls earlier in the game all the time that ends up causing more dominoes to fall in a negative sense later on in the game.
Maybe we can't blame Vitello, which I wholeheartedly agree with you there. But can we point a finger at Buster Posey going into this
season? Oh, absolutely. He gets all of the fingers.
I think especially when it comes, say what you will about the Devers trade and some of the position players, but when it came to the bullpen, I think there was just a strong consensus like, Buster, really, we're going to start the season with this? Like, this is a little unsettling. So while Vitello gets a pass, I think Buster Posey has a lot of explaining to do when it comes to the bullpen that, I mean, Rizzotto, as amazing as he is, he wasn't alone. There was a lot of people that could foresee what has taken place over the last 3 months.
Okay, it's wild to think that this bullpen would be this awful because, for the most part, over the last, really this since this ballpark opened in 2000, the Third and King Street era, Pac Bell, SBC, AT&T, Oracle, whatever you want to call it, the Giants have, for the most part, been consistently good at putting bullpens together. And heck, over the last 10 years, even during the Farhan Zaidi era, for all the sticks that we would shake at Farhan, the one thing that he was truly capable of doing was putting together a pretty good bullpen here. And I don't, it's going to sound a little crazy off the top, but like, I don't really blame the Giants so much for coming into this year thinking they can make it work with this bullpen. And the reason why is because they've been able to figure out ways to develop bullpens in the past, this organization. If they came into this year truly thinking that they could get a lot out of this bullpen because they believed in their ability to develop relievers at the big league level, I can see where they come to that conclusion. They've just failed colossally this year with this bullpen. And I don't think even the most pessimistic evaluator within that organization could have seen it being this much of a disaster with this bullpen. Even the most negative, you know, prognosis from the fan base probably could not have imagined it being this comically bad.
Well, there's nothing to develop here, though. I just think that this is who these guys are. It's not as though they're going to go to another team and then be really good.
I don't.
There's nothing here. There's nothing left in the tank, I don't think, with these guys. What I find sort of, what stands out to me when you talk about Buster Posey, the architect of this baseball team, is that the Giants have really sort of lost their identity. And what was their identity? It was pitching and defense. And Buster was smack dab in the middle of that, which I find somewhat surprising. And now it's almost as though he's tried to overcorrect what happened with Farhan and Gabe Kapler. The platooning, Farhan not pulling the trigger on high-priced free agents. So he says, listen, I'm going to get 9 guys, and I am going to spend money. And he gets his Devers, and he gets his Adames, and he re-signs Chapman. And he doesn't pay as much attention to the bullpen, which really was hand-in-hand with the starting pitching as well as the defense, the key to the success when this team was on top of baseball, had that dynastic run, including that outlier in 2021. All the same, it was just enough hitting, timely hitting, and then, of course, it was about your pitching and your defense and your bullpen. And for whatever reason, Buster Posey has completely steered away, maybe inadvertently, and has now got to an area where he's really top-heavy in terms of free agents and what he thinks, quote-unquote, is talent, but he's gotten so far away from really what is the magic dust in terms of the Giants winning. So where do we go from here? Pitching, pitching, pitching.
That's what you got to figure out.
And starts tonight, maybe.
Possibly, sure. They could go on a run at any point.
No. I'm talking about the draft.
Oh, that is true. The MLB draft is today. I don't know, what time does that start at, Rizzo?
I think it's later today, and yeah, and yeah, I don't
Rizzo,
know.
Rizzo, are they going with Jackson, Florida? Now I'm hearing that maybe they won't.
I thought it would be rock hard today. Rocking out.
Jackson, and there's a ton of shortstops.
It's crazy. If the Giants do take Rock Trowalski, the shortstop out of UCLA, why? Well, it's possible. He could slip the four. There's whispers that he could demand, you know, a ridiculous signing bonus.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And teams like, oh, I don't want to pay for that. And then he'll fall to number four, and that's when the Giants will. Because remember, the Giants have a little bit of extra money they can throw at draft picks because of the Pat Bailey trade, which
29th pick.
Could end up being a shrewd trade by Buster if everything pans out there. But Dan, by weekend's end, the Giants' top five prospects could all be shortstops. Mm. So I'm talking about Josar Gonzalez, obviously, Gavin Killian, Luis Hernandez. Who's the guy I'm forgetting there in that top four? Then obviously Rock will be in there as well. Who's the guy I'm forgetting there, Rizzo, of those?
Is it Emerson?
Emerson, maybe. I don't know. So anyway, yeah, draft is today.
If Chalowski slips to the Giants, that's huge.
There's also some Bay Area guys, by the way. Spangler from De La Salle, shortstop, and then Archer Horn from St. Ignatius.
Oh, nice. Go Cats.
So yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on the Giants. It's hard for me to really get up for the draft, though, Dan, because it's Johnny Level. That's the guy who I was forgetting there in that moment. It's hard for me to truly get up for the Major League Baseball draft, though, Dan, because it's like, all right, we got Rock. We'll see him in 3 years, I guess.
Well, no, see, that's the one thing about Rock. They're saying he could be starting for the White Sox within 8 months. Yeah, that's how fast they think this guy can be projected.
Okay, well, it's some of these guys go faster than others, obviously, so we will see there. Listen, if he's able to contribute sooner rather than later, like, I'll take it at this point. Like, anything that could be a help for this team would be huge. Again, because last night they go against a guy in Tanner Gordon who, again, came up with a 6.95 ERA. And the Giants, they faced him twice already this year. He had thrown eight total innings across two starts against the Giants, giving up nine runs. Both those starts were at Coors Field, though.
Yeah, his splits are pretty bad.
Yeah, and I asked Tony about this after the game, like, how come Tanner was so much tougher this time? And he's basically like, yeah, you know, the home road splits, and he threw a little bit of a different pitch mix at him last night.
Oh, yeah.
This is a guy, Gordon, he doesn't throw his sinker ball a lot, but he was throwing that two-seam sinker a lot last night. And I do think adding that extra pitch into the mix, something that the Giants had not seen all year long from this guy, maybe that threw him off a little bit. Sinkers don't really play as well at Coors Field, so just classic Coors Field. That's what happened the last time the Giants saw this guy, and it's just...
Could there not be two more dissimilar teams and organizations and ballparks than Colorado and San Francisco?
Oh, yeah, no, because they're opposite ends of the sea level spectrum.
Right. Colorado's 5,000 plus?
Yeah, well, exactly a mile high. That's why they got the purple ring around the top deck of the of Coors Field that marks exactly 5,280 feet above sea level.
And Oracle's about 10 feet?
Basically, yeah. Feet? I mean, the ocean's right there. The cove, I should say. I want to get that accurate. The cove is right there. The water is right there. Sea level is right there. Actually, it's funny, Dan. When you look at the numbers over the years, when the Giants go right from playing at Oracle Park to Coors Field, their pitching always gets lit up because you go from the benefit of sea level to the detriment of elevation. Yeah. Conversely, if the Rockies ever start a road trip where they are in Colorado and then start a road trip in San Francisco, their offense just falls off a cliff.
Yeah.
And you go back, I did this a few years ago, you could go back and look at the first game that the Rockies have played at Oracle Park when it was their first game of a road trip. They almost lose all the time. Whereas, same thing for the Giants, when their first game is at Coors Field, they almost lose all the time. So, yeah, that difference in elevation, it rears its ugly head constantly with these two teams.
I always maintain that they shouldn't be playing baseball in Colorado. I know it sounds terrible. I know they had a couple of good runs with Tulowitzki and company, but, you know, think about it. When you're the Giants and you're going to Colorado, it's like anything can happen. Like, you never know. Expect the unexpected. That shouldn't be the norm for a Major League Baseball team. I just don't think they took into consideration enough of the elements. You can play football. Denver Broncos are legit. And obviously basketball is basketball with the Nuggets, but it has never fit in Colorado. And I'm sort of worried about baseball in Las Vegas, whether the altitude isn't as high, but we saw that game played out at their minor league ballpark, and I'm just curious as to whether or not we're going to be experiencing something like that again, but this time in the American
League. What's the elevation of Las Vegas?
It's about 3,000, I want to say.
Okay, it's not that bad, because I know Phoenix is pretty up there as well. It's like 1,000 to 2,000 as well, so the ball kind of carries at Chase Field in that dry desert air a little bit as well, because, yeah, you mentioned the teams the Rockies have had success with. They've usually been very offensively driven teams.
Yeah.
And when the Rockies are a good team and they have that home field advantage at Coors Field, they're as dangerous as any team with that home field advantage. When they know they have that last at bat at Coors, that gives them a lot of confidence. So their best teams have always been built on that ability. And you look at this Rockies team right now, they have a very good looking lineup. Last weekend, you know, Dave Fleming and Hunter Pence were gushing about these Rockies young hitters.
I like McCarthy.
McCarthy's good. Karros is a really Kyle Karros, Eric Karros' son.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't really like him all that much. He's been very
you
good.
You would like Eric Karros if you ever met him.
Oh, no, I'm sure it's Dodger hate. It's not hate.
But
it's,
he's really atypical for a baseball player. He's like really well-read. He really gets into, like, you know, there's a lot of depth to him. But go ahead. Yeah. I understand.
But yeah, Hunter Goodman, their catcher, he's a really good hitter. Mickey Moniak, he's a solid player. Ezekiel Tovar, not the greatest hitter, but it's just a solid shortstop who, again, had that walk-off home run against the Giants last month. So the Rockies have a good core of young hitters coming along, and it's hard not to – I can't believe I'm saying this. I cannot believe I'm about to say the words that I'm about to say here. It's hard not to be a little bit jealous of the hitters they got.
So let me ask you, who's in a better situation going forward?
You know?
I dare you.
All right. Let's go. Let's get worked up into saying this. Let's go. Got to be honest with ourselves here, Sam. Let's be honest. Oh my God, are the Rockies actually in a better situation? I mean, it's just the Giants, they got these three big contracts in Adamas, Devers, and Chapman, and it feels like they're not going to be able to go anywhere as long as they got these three anchor contracts here, whereas the Rockies don't have anything like that. I think Chris Bryant's still on the team. I think he's still an employee of Colorado Rockies Enterprises or whatever they're called. But he's probably, if we ever see him on the field again, I'd be shocked. But they have so much young talent in this lineup, whereas the Giants, they do. Casey Schmidt, Elliot Ramos, Jung-Hoo Lee. But the Rockies, it seems like they have a lineup right now that they can look at and be like, all right, these are the guys we're riding with. Where the Giants, you look at their lineup, and yeah, there's guys that you want a part of your future. Bryce Eldridge in there as well. He took a tough 0-for last night, though. Did draw a walk, which I'd like to see him getting on base. But I guess I'm curious right now, how many Giants fans would want to swap lineups with the Rockies right now? I actually don't think it would be that many, but I'm sure there's some out there that would.
I'm trying to be impartial here. I still lean towards San Francisco, and I like to think of this year sort of like that of the Atlanta Braves of a year ago, where it's just one of those weird blips. You can't really explain it, and it's still a good lineup, but for whatever reason, they're not winning. And you saw what, of course, Atlanta did last year, essentially with the exact same personnel and to what it is that they're doing this year. I still think that San Francisco is in a better situation, and I like the nucleus of their team, maybe again because I'm closer to it. I still think Colorado is Colorado at the end of the day. Yeah, they have some young prospects, but it's still, you know, it's the same old mantra with them. We're about 2 or 3 years away. We're going on decades.
Well, the problem with the Rockies, why I don't see them ever taking that next step, and maybe right now the Rockies look like they're in a better position than the Giants, especially coming off that loss last night. The Rockies are never going to be able to make it work pitching-wise. And also, that's an organization. Say what you will about how the Giants are as an organization. This has been an ugly year for the Giants in terms of just how they operate as an organization. They are a more stable franchise than the Rockies.
Oh, no doubt.
And so, like, are the Rockies in a better position right now at this very moment, Saturday, July 11th at 9:24 in the morning? Sure. Maybe they have a more exciting lineup in that you kind of see a future and a direction with that lineup, whereas the Giants lineup, I think the future and the direction's a little bit more murky. If you had to ask me, put $100 right now, who plays a playoff game next, the Giants or the Rockies? Yeah, I'm throwing that money on the Giants.
How about something a little bit more pertinent? Who's going to finish higher?
Let's get into that on the other side, because a news story broke yesterday, Dan, about a certain player who's up for an extension with a certain baseball team that plays at the corner of 3rd and King. And honestly, there might be a case to be made that you don't need to trade Luis Arraez.
All right.
We'll get into that on the other side. Plus, I do want to hear from Dylan Smith on the other side. We're also going to hear from Tony Vitale. We got to talk a little bit more about that ninth inning as well. Yeah. So We'll get to all that starting on the other side. Don't forget Ron Washington, my chat with him. That's coming up at 11 o'clock. Got a lot of stuff to talk about on the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. It's our final show before the All-Star break. We got a home run derby set, Dan. I don't know, maybe we'll pick a winner there. And you see what Bryce Harper suggested they should do for the home run derby?
He got snubbed, didn't he?
Actually, I haven't seen the field yet, but...
Go ahead, sorry.
But, no, he suggests that when they break out the gold balls, that they use aluminum bats.
Oh, wow. I kind of like it.
So, anyway, we'll talk about all that. Plus, I also got the five worst losses of the first half for the Giants.
Oh, wow. That's doing some homework.
Oh, it was not a very hard list to put together. On the other side, brought to you by Fairmont Bank, here for you, here for good.
Line drive, center field. And did he catch it? Somebody make the call. They're going to say he did catch it.
I don't know if he did catch it.
Well, the out call was made by the first base umpire.
Now back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7 The Game.
It is the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. Sam Lohman here alongside Dan Devone. Giants lose 4-3, and just another disaster loss in a season that is full of them. With the loss, Giants are just...
Want to talk about that play that we just heard coming in?
Yeah, let's get into that play there, Dan, because that was one of the, by the way, Giants 39-55. I was trying to find their record there. Same number of wins as the Colorado Rockies. They are only two games ahead of the Rockies in that loss column, so that puts them officially one game up on the Rockies in the standings. A loss today would put the Giants officially, I believe, let me pull up the standings here to make sure, yes, into a tie for last place in the National League. So this is the National League's toilet bowl, basically, this weekend here. Yeah, let's talk about that play last night in the top, in the bottom of the ninth inning. Casey Schmidt is up. Hits a blooper out to center field there that falls in front of Cole Kearing. He makes a sliding catch there. And at first, when I saw it, Dan, I thought he caught the ball. I look at the second base umpire, and he's doing nothing. I think it was what's my guy's name? Our second base umpire. I'm spacing on his name at the moment. There, I called him out last night. I'll try and find that in a little bit. But he's just standing there, not doing anything. No call. Just watching the play. Like, whoa, that was pretty cool. That was a really nice catch. Am I supposed to do something? I don't know. And Grant McCray, who's on second base, is look at the umpire like, what are we doing here? There's just complete confusion. Casey Schmidt's at first base with Luis Arraez. So you got two guys on the base there. They throw the base at first. They throw to third for the force out, I guess. And in that brief moment, like, the game would have been over. And there's a stoppage in play. And Tony goes out to have a conversation with it. Dan, I know, were you watching that last night? What was going through your mind when that was going down?
It was just that. It was absolute chaos. Like, somebody's got to step up and make a call here. What's going on? So I begin to wonder, maybe I just take it a little bit too far here. I don't know, does instant replay play a part of this? That maybe you're either hesitant to make the call or you're reliant on replay? Because back in the day, you make a definitive call. Umpires do not simply not make it. You can get the call wrong,
yes,
right? But to
you got to do something,
be
right?
Completely indifferent and not make a call. I'm just wondering if there's other extenuating factors now in Major League Baseball that is, it's not a trend, but maybe that lent to what happened last night.
Yeah. William Traynor, by the way, thank you, Risotto, for getting in my ear on that one. I was screaming his name all last night. And then, of course, this morning it escapes me.
This gets back to you when middle inning relievers don't do well. We go after him, but of course, when they do, we don't say a word. Same thing with umpires. All of a sudden, Traynor's getting run only because
exactly.
He screwed up.
Well, I guess so. What happened there on that play, and I didn't see this happen because I'm looking at the second base umpire for the call because he's the umpire closest to the play there.
He's running out the center field.
He has the best view. And I'm literally, Dan, the umpire's standing like, if you're Cole Kearing, I'm the umpire, and it's not this close, but like, I'm staring right at you. I have the view of it. And for him to just not make a call there, I've never seen that. Crew chief Lance Barksdale, who's the first base umpire this time, he did make the call. He signaled out, which, again, I thought it was an out too from where I was standing. Mm-hmm. And the replay clearly showed that the ball hit the grass before Kearing trapped it in his glove. It was a very easy replay to fix. Luckily, they did make the right call. And here is how that sounded.
Here's what I saw. He's signaling. It's an out.
But if he signals it's an out for a catch, but the ball isn't actually caught, then it's a no catch. And if that's the case, the game's over on a double
after
play.
After review, the call on the field is overturned. There is no catch. Based on the reaction of the fielders, one on the call, and the runners, we're moving each runner up one base. There'll be the bases loaded.
So there you go.
How about that? Bases loaded.
And there we go. We got our bases loaded there. And
screwed the Rockies, if you think about it.
Well, it was the right call.
Yeah, but the Rockies could have got the force.
Well, I think if the second base umpire, if he rules him safe, then Grant McCray easily takes third there because he has the speed there to make it happen. Arias, I believe, was about halfway there. So, no, I think in that situation, I think you still have bases loaded. I don't think it screwed the Rockies over too much. I don't know if he would have gotten the force there if the call was ruled correctly in that situation.
Because everybody had to freeze, and you have no idea. I don't know. It's sort of a stop and start from McCray. Does he make it to third? Because that's pretty shallow center field. And, you know, you certainly don't want to get doubled up in that situation.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of uncertainty. And more often than not, I've seen plays where the runner just, I'm not sure what to do. And you get caught up in no man's land. You get that force out either.
Oh, no, absolutely. So McCray, he was a few feet off second, but he's a faster runner. So I think if he doesn't need to take as big of a step off the base to play it safe. Arias is about somewhere between halfway and a quarter from first base. I do think that both of them would have gotten to their requested bases in that situation had the call actually had been made. So, and after the game, obviously, we asked Tony about it. We asked Grant about it. Here is what Tony Vitello had to say about that whole hit that wasn't a hit but was a hit.
Well, the second base umpire didn't make a call. It was the first base umpire, so the call was out. So the two runners did a pretty good job of not panicking, doing anything crazy, but they both retreated to the bag because of the out call, not necessarily what they saw with their eyes. So the replay, first of all, they wanted to communicate, make sure they were all on the same page. And then the replay was to see if the ball was caught or not. So if it was not caught, everybody would move up safely a base with the hitter occupying first base. If it was caught, to my understanding, it just would have been an out. Both guys retreated back to the bags.
So I will say this with McCray and Arias. I honestly thought they played it perfectly. When in doubt, just go back to the base that you were at. I think that was the safest move to do there, especially again, it did look like a catch in real time. And so I do like the fact that, yeah, Tony said they did not panic. They made the right move there. And a team that has had so many base running gaffes this year, kind of refreshing change of pace to see them play that one kind of perfectly on the base pass.
Well, I'm not sure where were they going to go. Like, was McCray going to try and score on that thing? I mean, like,
I don't know if he would have been able to come around and score. Yeah.
No, but I'm saying there was so much uncertainty.
Yeah.
Where are you going to go? Like, no one's going to advance to another bag thinking that he caught it and we're in the ninth inning here. I don't think that there was real. I mean, yeah, we can give credit to the base runners, but I think that's sort of a no brainer. Anybody would have done that, right? Like,
well, there's
where
a
are you
lot.
Of, go? Do you think really somebody would have just taken off?
Dan, it's this.
Aside from Ruben Rivera, I don't know.
Oh, that's the worst base running in the history of the game. Dan, it's the 2026 Giants. If there's ever a team that's going to find a way to screw up that situation, it probably would have been that one, but they didn't. Yeah. And so we could at least rest easy knowing that in that one wacky situation, I thought Arias and Grant McCray played that situation rather as well as you could have. But then you had several minutes of confusion there, and I was like pacing around the press box, just being like, how do you not make a call there? Like, what are we doing here? And this is it already at a ninth inning that was like going on 40 minutes long. It's late. I'm tired. Everyone wants to go home. There's a fireworks show afterwards. And it's just so many unnecessary delays in that ninth inning. In fact, the top of the ninth inning, there was another delay. I forget who was at the plate. I don't know if it was it Mickey Moniak or it might have been Willie Castro in that top of the ninth inning there. Who was? I think it was Moniak, where the first pitch, they reviewed it to see if it was a strike or a foul tip. But, like, it's a strike either way. What are we reviewing here?
Yeah.
I didn't understand that one at all, but it is what it is. So it's already a really long ninth inning. It's already a really confusing ninth inning. And again, luckily they did make the right call. If they had ruled them out or worse, like ruled a force out, game over, I honestly think you would have seen a riot at that ballpark last night. Because, like, come on, you could not end a game like that with an umpire not making a call and then ruling these guys out because your umpire doesn't make a call. Luckily, that's not the reality that we had to experience last
night. So when you get a team's, when you get two teams like that, Colorado and San Francisco, clearly two of the worst teams in Major League Baseball this year, do you also get the worst umpiring crew? Is that sort of how it works?
Well, Lance Barksdale is one of the better umpires out there. The other guys, Ryan Wills, Trainer, Will Little, I don't know a whole lot about them. Maybe if we can get our guy Ruderman to call in. I shot him a text saying...
Ruderman replay coming up today, brought to you
by... I would love to hear Ruderman's replay call of that one last night. So we'll get him on hopefully at some point. I sent out the bat signal for him. I texted him, Steven, Dan is summoning you. So we'll see if he...
Bottom line is you cannot... Why are you there if you're not making a call?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you doing? What's your role here? Like, mm-hmm. Why'd you get out of bed?
And heads up to crew chief Lance Barksdale again for making a call. Because at least you got to make a call there. Even if it's the wrong call, you have the ability to correct these calls now because of replay. But I guess I was tipped off, and shout out to my girl at NBC, Lauren Johnson. She told me this. She's like, apparently it was a different umpiring crew last night than it was the night before, which you don't usually see different umpiring crews change in the midst of a series.
Yeah, that's odd.
So they had one umpiring crew on Thursday night, and then they had this whole new crew last night. So I don't know why that was the case there or how much of a role that plays in what happened last night. I mentioned Grant McCrae. He was the guy on second base. He also had a pretty good view of it. Here's his recollection of how that whole thing went down.
Well, you know, I saw it off the bat, and, you know, I froze, and I saw it. You know, him lay out for it, and I didn't think he caught it, but the umpire at second base, you know, he didn't give a call. So I just panicked and went back to the bag and was like, dude, like, what's the call? What's the call? And he didn't say anything. So I was just standing there confused. Just glad he didn't catch it and I didn't run into a double play or something.
Well, first off, I love the idea of Grant looking at the umpire and be like, dude, what's the call?
I would have loved to see the umpires.
Well, then what? He just doesn't say anything. So he's just standing there just like,
does he
not, like, how do you not say anything? How do you at least look at him and just like calls out, say it, like say something?
Are there ever any post comments from umpires in situations like this?
No.
I know they don't address the media, but is there some governing body that will release some sort of a statement? I know they'll do it in the NFL and the NBA.
You know, like a last 2 minute report.
Yeah, but
the
I'm
NBA.
Curious, is there any sort of checks and balances here? Because there's, I mean, you need some sort of an explanation.
Who polices the police kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, what if that could have gotten really ugly? You need some sort of a...
Especially, again, if they had been ruled out, or worse, if the game had been ruled over, in part because, you know, Willie Trainer doesn't make a call there and creates this, you know, confusion, and the team suffers because of an umpire's inability to do their job, that's about as bad as it gets. You know, we're in this age where so many people are trying to, or want to see the phasing out of umpires from the game, and I'm very much against that. I want umpires. I like to yell at umpires. Mm-hmm. It is very much a part of the game. But it makes it so much easier to say, well, we don't need those guys when you see moments like that happen. It's just a bad umpiring situation, just quite frankly.
Well, I don't know that an umpire makes any sort of difference there when it comes to replays, because either way, you're going to consult the replay and there's going to be confusion,
mm-hmm.
right? So not knowing it's a catch, it was almost as if, you know, there were no umpires to begin with, because you were going to rely on replay regardless. That the replay was making that call. Certainly the guy on the field didn't do it. So.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If the umpire can, like, make the call and give some clarity there, then it is on the umpire there. Then the umpires are doing their jobs. And to your point there, Dan, when you're basically just... You're going right to the replay, and you just said, I think, perfectly yourself. It's like the umpire's not even there. The replay is making the call in that situation. And there, it's like, well, this is why people don't want umpires.
Yeah.
Because if they're not going to make the call, the technology's going to do that for them. It becomes so much easier to say, well, what do we need you guys for? And for a profession that is it very much being threatened for its existence, that's a bad look for umpiring. Now, that could be the moment that breaks the camel's back, the straw that breaks the camel's back and ends umpiring. No. But if you're of the mindset that you want umpires phased out, There you go. You got another example to add to your case to make against umpires last night.
Just inexplicable.
Mm-hmm.
Say, give me something.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't see it, even if you're going to blow it, you got, you know.
Can you imagine if, like, in football, like, Brock Purdy hits Ricky Pierce on the back of the end zone and none of the refs do anything with their arms? Like, or Steph Curry hits a three, you know, hits a contested three and the gets knocked down in the process and the ref does absolutely nothing. Actually, wait, that's been most of Steph's career, so maybe that's not a great example there. But you know what I mean, though? You know what it kind of reminds me of is the Fail Mary from years ago in the Monday night game with the Aaron, I think it was Aaron Rodgers who threw that pass.
Oh,
it was Packers Seahawks or something like that.
Yeah.
And one ref, you know, does touchdown, the other ref does no catch. Next thing you know, the replacement refs were gone and the real refs were back. It's kind of one of those things. Just bad officiating there. Hey, Grant, has that ever happened to you before?
No, not in my career. I've never seen it, but he really just stood there, cold as a fish, and just glad I made the right decision.
Cold as a fish. I love that line.
Who's working on the car in the background?
So there's a little, like, equipment room just so you go in the clubhouse, to your right is some lockers, and there's a little equipment room there off to the side of the clubhouse. And they're working on, I think they're like working on bats, cleats, stuff like that. But yeah, that's what you hear drilling in the background is the equipment guys working on their cleats and bats.
What do you think of
McCray
coming up? Are you a McCray kind of guy?
I like Grant McCray. He's a good guy. I chat with him a little bit in spring training. He was from South Florida, so, you know, he saw my Miami jacket. So we talked a little Miami Hurricanes football. And you know me, that. You want to talk Canes football with me? We're in. We're friends at that point.
So I have a larger question that you just mentioned. That do you think? Because this used to happen to me. Because I see things from afar. But when you are as close to the players, and you seem to be a Tony, you'd be more willing to give Tony Vitello the benefit of the doubt than I would. Do you think because you have a relationship with him, or you like him from a personality standpoint? The same with McCray, sort of clouds your judgment when it comes to things like that.
Well, this is why I'll never be a beat writer, Dan. Like, I can openly admit, like, I'm never going to have that unbiasedness that beat writers have. Like, I always give Steven Rizzotto grief because he won't wear a jersey to a Giants game. Which, Rizzotto, you were at the game last night in the stands? You were a civilian?
I was in the Gotham Club.
Ooh, Mr. Swanky over here. What were you wearing?
A flannel.
Of course you were.
Of course.
You were born in a flannel.
What hat were you wearing?
I was actually not wearing a hat.
Oh, the rare hatless night from Steven Rizzo. I have never seen this guy wearing a Giants jersey. You grew up a Giants fan though, right, Rizzo?
I did. I don't think I own a Giants jersey right now.
How'd you get into the Gotham Club?
Actually, a few friends of mine who I've done podcasts with in the past, it's all about connections, Brooks Knudsen had a ticket, and we all just got in there and hung out, and it was fun.
Is the Gotham Club in the stadium? It is, right?
It is in the stadium and in the arcade.
Under Levi's Landing.
Inside, so we were right literally by the people that were doing the out-of-town scoreboard.
Is it kind of swanky? What's the crowd like?
Very swanky, very upper class.
Was anyone else wearing flannel?
There was one other guy wearing the same flannel, and I grabbed on his flannel, and I said, nice flannel. And then he was like, yeah, man, yeah. And I was like, Costco?
What are you talking to me for?
I was like, Costco? He's like, yep, Costco.
Oh, my God, you're buying shirts at Costco. That's beautiful.
You can get some good deals
at
Costco.
Can you get me into the Gotham Club? Sounds like
no, because I got in with someone myself. So
he's not one of the someones you got to know.
In fact, they asked me if I was a member or if I was a pinch hitter. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess I say pinch hitter because I'm not a member.
Yeah, I think the flannel's a dead giveaway that you're pinch hitting tonight.
We can probably wear a jersey into the Gotham Club.
Shut up.
Not that Rizzotto ever would. But so actually, there was a couple weeks ago, he was at a game. He's in the stands with his lovely girlfriend, Adriana. And I go over and say what's up to him. And this dude, he's wearing his 95.7 The Game sweatshirt. Meanwhile, she's all decked out in her Giants gear. And I'm like, how come she has this down, but you don't? But anyway.
I have had a good experience with that 95.7 The Game hoodie at the ballpark. One time I was with Mark Grandy and Ken Luttrell, producer extraordinaires. And somebody came up to us and said, I love 95.7 The Game. Do you know Joe Shasky? He's my guy.
Oh, wow.
And we took off. I told him we worked there, and he loved us.
Darb, darb, darb. That's my Shasky impersonation. I've had people come up to me and say that exact same thing, actually. Interesting. People like Joe Shasky. He's a fun guy. So, but anyway, yeah.
Well,
bringing this back to the initial point, I can openly admit that I have a bias. I still cover this team, I believe, as a fan. Like, I can never do what Justice De Los Santos and Shayna Rubin and Evan Wiebeck, what they do, because they can remove their bias and do their job in an impartial way. that's just not my style. So yeah, I do. I am in there as a fan, and you got to play it cool. Obviously, there's a line that you don't want to cross. As far as like the building relationships stuff like that, you're like, yeah, like I've come to really like Matt Gage this year because, you know, getting to know him a little bit in spring training, it's like, yeah, you're a cool guy. I'm gonna root for you. Like, yeah. you get stan status now. Like, I want to see you succeed. So yeah, like you do chat with these guys, you get to know them a little bit. Does it make criticizing them a little bit harder? Yeah, sure, at times. You got to go about it in a correct way. You know, like when Logan Webb has a rough week, like he did this week, he's got to be coming out and honest and say, like, yeah, he had a rough week. And Logan's always very blunt and honest about his assessing his performance. And if you are going to criticize these guys, you got to do it in a way that isn't personal. Keep it professional. Keep it business. Keep it strictly to what happens between the lines. And that's how you create that balance.
Yeah, I guess my question is, do you feel as though it compromises sometimes when you come on here and you're passing judgment on a particular manager or a player, and whether or not you can see it through an objective lens, which obviously you said you're compromised from the get-go. So
yeah. I still think I can be honest about the situation. Like, I don't know if I'm ever going to come on and go like on a 2.5-minute long rant, screaming and ranting and raving about how awful I think everyone on this team is. Mm. Part of it is also bias or unbiased. Like, there's a lot of shows I do where right afterwards I'm going to the ballpark and I'm gonna be in that clubhouse with these guys, so I'm not gonna say something like, oh, Logan Webb, you're absolutely trash, blah 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 blah, and then go into that clubhouse and have to face him right afterwards, because that just creates an awkward situation that I'm not trying to be in. So it I don't think it prevents me from offering criticism to the team, but I definitely have to be more tact and how I go about giving out that criticism. You're allowed to criticize these guys. They're professional athletes. They're paid millions of dollars. They know it's part of the job. So yeah, I'll support them a little bit more maybe than some, but you know, I'll be honest, just maybe not as flamboyantly as others might.
And I think to Tony Vitello's credit, because he is such a nice guy,
mm-hmm.
and because regardless of all of the losing, he treats everybody's pretty much the same. And he doesn't lose his cool, that a lot of people are willing, whether they're aware of it or not, to give him the benefit of the doubt. There's a lot of knives out, obviously, going after a manager when you have the sort of team with the expectations that the Giants had coming into the season, especially with him coming out of the collegiate ranks. So there's definitely critics, but I think he's been able to stave. It could be a lot worse, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I think sort of his personality has been able to sort of work in his advantage, because I think, being a nice guy, just think about it, if he was a little prickly or if he wasn't as attractive as I always like to bring up.
Pretty privileged.
I think it could be a lot worse. And I just think that sometimes people, whether they're conscious of it or not, are a little bit reserved in their criticism of him, because we don't like to go after people that are we think are or perceive as being genuinely good people.
I would agree with that. I mean, he does. I think he's put on a pretty good relationship with the media so far. I think some media members like him more than other media members do. I think there's certain media members that like him less than other media members do. Bob Melvin, I think, had a good relationship with the media because he's been around these media members for so long. Gabe Kapler, I thought it was hit and miss, but then whenever he comes back with the Marlins, all the beat writers go up and converse with him and chat with him like they're old friends. So, but yeah, when you have a good relationship with the media, that they're going to cover you a little bit differently. When you're a jerk to them, they're going to come after you a little bit. That's why the pen is mightier than the sword, as they say. So, and I think in this region, you know, Kyle Shanahan, I mean, it's the NFL. He's always been kind of prickly with the media. NFL's a different relationship. But Steve Kerr has always been pretty good with the media. And the media contingent that covers the Warriors has a lot of respect for Kerr. So I think that comes out in their coverage as well. That being said, though, Tony does have a good relationship with the media, but I don't think that's going to stop the media from pointing out obvious flaws with the team or obvious flaws with his managing. I also think the reason Tony gets good treatment from the media is because the beat contingent is aware enough to know that these issues go so far beyond anything Tony is doing that it's kind of hard to crush Tony for reasons he can't really control.
Yeah, I think it goes beyond just the beat writers and the people that cover the Giants on a daily basis that have that sort of intimate relationship and the intimate access. I think just from fans, when you're watching the Giants and you see him in a press conference or you see sound bites, whether it's online or wherever it is that you gather your information, you see that his demeanor is sort of, it's like a nice guy, whether you're, again, whether you're aware of it or not, because it could be a lot worse when you're talking to the average fan. What's wrong with the Giants? You know, their ire is directed in 35 different directions, including Buster Posey and Devers and Adamas or whomever. And, of course, Vitello is thrown into that. But I think that it could be a lot worse for Tony Vitello if he wasn't as nice, of, at least perceived as being the sort of nice guy that he is.
Yeah, again, I think the being the nice guy certainly helps. I would push back on, like, that's like the determining factor of why he gets positive coverage. I think it's just, there's just so much.
I wouldn't say it's positive at this point. I'm just saying it could be a lot worse.
He's not going to get dragged as much. Believe me, there are members of the media who you see it in some of the stuff they write. I'm not going to name any names, Athletic, but you see it every now and then, just little lines here and there about mentioning, yeah, he was a first-time manager. And so there are little small shots you see here and there. But again, in a season like that, he's going to take small shots here and there from everybody. So on the other side, I want to hear from Dylan Smith and also Luis Arraez. He wants an extension, apparently. Let's get into that. It's the Orange Black Weekend Wrap brought to you by Furama Bank. Here for you, here for good.